All right, here we are sitting with Gary B, the sole survivor, the only Spartan employee left, or as paranoia would have you believe. But before we get into that, I think the thing most people want to know about Gary is your recent podium in Jacksonville and your PR half marathon.
Yeah, I've been training hard. I had a Ironman in September that I ended up DNFing. Not something I want to do again. I do have an Ironman coming up in 4 weeks. So just been training consistent and feel good. It was fun to run a competitive sprint with Scott DeFane Knowles, who of course had to bypass me right at the fire jump. So I did take third in the Sunday open sprint at Jacksonville. So, you know, big podium.
Scott is no slouch though. Scott can haul.
Yeah.
Usually longer distance, but
yeah, we started off stupid. We were doing like 620 miles out of the chute. And then we started hitting mud and got a little slower and realized probably 620 wasn't the right way to be doing a casual sprint.
That course looked slop. Like, I mean, we didn't get to see all of it, right? But what we saw looked super sloppy and messy and very slow going.
Yeah, it had rained quite a bit during the build. Nothing pre-build or nothing race day. It was beautiful weather out there for race days, but our crew that was out there for the whole week did nothing but kind of get rained on. So very muddy, very churned up after the super people went off Saturday morning. And I think it got worse for the obviously the Sunday National Series.
It still looked like a good race. I know the obviously attendance was in the elite wave was a little sketchy, but that was to be anticipated. I mean, some unfortunate scheduling. And here's the thing straight out, and I'll let you address this, but it seems to me a lot of people like, why would Spartan do this? Why would they schedule the two events at the same time? And it's my guess that you don't do that. That's a completely different entity.
Yeah, so Saudi Arabia, Tough Mudder, they are a, you know, franchise licensee partner, whatever you want to call it. They were, you know, it's not an HQ event. And so this was their event. They obviously had their dates in mind and kind of put it on. Unfortunately, yeah, it was on top of one of our major events. So we'll have to see. I have some thoughts in mind for how we can get some more participation in Big Bear in Utah and, you know, hopefully drive some more people out there. And still working on some stuff for Seattle to make that kind of that big event. I know VJ has talked about wanting to make that kind of a major event. Obviously, recent changes, I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit later in the podcast. I don't want to say derailed it, but have slowed the conversations down a bit, but still quite in my mind. I love VJ's concept of just making that a massive event for us, obviously.
Screw it, let's do it now. Yeah, it's cool, right? Like VJ's, I think his intentions are definitely in the right spot, right? Where he wants to get just like they had over in Saudi, right? They had a great turnout. It was very exciting to see all those people, and he'd like to get that in Seattle. And as he says, and there's another piece I want to talk about this part afterwards too, qualification becomes the problem, is that because last year was with the 3K and then this year having to do it. So right now, what is the qualification to run in a U.S. National Series race?
So U.S. National Series race, you either had to be top 15 last year in any elite heat, and then top three in the new competitive heat this year will kind of get you into a National Series race. So obviously we did the top 15 last year, so we would have a little bit of a base to start this year off with, and then kind of on a rolling basis, it's going to be, you know, being a top three in the competitive heat get you that pro ban and get you into any National Series. So not a huge barrier to entry, especially knowing last year some of the heats, you know, 15 might have been all there was. But we did that purposely. We obviously didn't want to start off the year with no one in these series, especially knowing Jacksonville was only the third race here for us. So we wanted to kind of open up the qualifications a little bit for this year in this new system.
And then so VJ suggesting kind of scratch that, have one big special race. Now, here's the thing for me, and I like the concept, but I'm also a stickler for rules, and I like rules, and I like when once they're put in place that's what they are. You change them at the end of the year and stuff. So I appreciate the pickle that puts you guys in. And I mean, yeah. How do you address that?
Obviously, it's something we have to talk about. It's not too hard because actually, to get to Seattle, all you need to do is be top 20 in any of the National Series races. And obviously, Jacksonville was a little bit of a bust for some of these racers because they were over in Saudi Arabia. But we still have Big Bear, we still have Utah. So there's still two great opportunities to get into Seattle. Also Canadian has their series, which will lead into Seattle, as will the Mexican races. So I believe both Mexico and Canada do have three race series. So there's still eight more chances to get into Seattle. So yes, this one spot was kind of hard for a lot of our top elites, but there's still lots of opportunities. So if nothing else, and we can't make some sort of exception, it's not like this is a hard gatekeeping here. VJ and all these athletes he's trying to get out there should very easily be able to place a top 20 in any of these series events.
It's and let's say in order to race in the national series in the pro wave, what do you need to qualify for that?
So national series, that's where it just needs your pro band. So either top 15 last year or top three this year.
Or top three.
So yeah. So again, pretty low barrier to entry this year because it is a new system. And anytime you make a change, you want to make sure that you're not shortchanging yourself and opportunities.
All right. So I'm gonna go back to quals a little bit later. And I'm going to jump a little bit back to where I was going to go. Recently, Spartan has, and I'm going to say not kibosh, we'll say postponed the Spartan Ambassador program. And it caused a lot of panic as well because it surely followed some key, three key names, I guess four key names, leaving company one way or another. That's their story to tell. We'll let them deal with that. But it followed on the heels of that, and then the ambassador program. So apparently, let's like everybody, and including myself, a little bit of panic sets in. The sky is falling. So what's? I know some people have gotten word from Spartan in emails and stuff as to why they did this. What's going on? But just to make it common public knowledge, why exactly is the program on hiatus, and what's kind of the end game?
Yeah, so I can't get too much into it because that's not my area. But obviously, I mean, a little bit of background. I started off on the street team for Spartan, which was our original ambassador program. It was just guerrilla marketing. You got credit for each sign up. We all had individual links, and it was a sign up based thing. Was a large program, I would say, but realistically, for every 100 people, there was probably five that ever actually, closed on a race. And out of those five, maybe there was one that sold more than a handful. So we had to modify that program. And, we've gone to volunteer hours. We've gone to different things with, going to different events and stuff like that. So the program has evolved many, many times over the years. So this is just another evolution of that. Like I said, I don't have all the details. I know something big is coming up, in the next couple weeks, but this isn't really something new. Obviously, the timing of it seems like it. And as you mentioned, we've kind of had a couple people leave, and it's more than that. We've lost some of our social media kind of editors, and there's all departments there. And it wasn't that the people, weren't good people. It was just that the positions have evolved, and unfortunately, their positions kind of evolved with that. So, obviously, I won't make that clear. Very good friends with Steve and Garfield and all of them. So, it's nothing negative on them. It's just evolving of the company. And yeah, I mean, the ambassador program has probably gone through, six iterations in the past 10 years, 12 years. So, this isn't really an uncommon thing. It's not a sky is a falling. It's just that. What we were currently doing wasn't really working, and we just need to reevaluate what we're doing with it.
And like I'll tell you straight out, I had people message me and say, like, dude, do I sign up for races? Are they gonna have races? And I'm like, I think you're okay. I think you're fine. I think you're still good. It's not that bad. It definitely could put some shock into people, but I think we're safe to sign up still.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it's, COVID, and I hate to say this because COVID's been what, 4 years now, but COVID did hurt everybody, but we've seen the numbers. I mean, Jacksonville was back up there. SoCal was a great race, and We're no longer, seeing like 1,000, 2,000 people like we did just coming out of COVID. Like we're back up into, 8,000, 9,000 racers at these events. And it's still a little bit shorter than COVID numbers, but much, much healthier. And we still grow as far as that goes. So obviously, I think I probably would be one of the people not to know if the sky was really falling. But looking at the numbers, I know we have very aggressive goals and we are hitting them and beating them in some cases. So to me, everything's good. And, I'm still here. I'm not looking for another job.
All right, so we're sitting here, and you said the numbers are good, and we've had that experience up here, like here last year for Blue Mountain. I think we were like 7,000, somewhere in that neck of the woods. I don't have the exact numbers. Let's just say around there. But what does seem to be dwindled a bit is the elite wave, is the pro wave numbers. And again, just to promote more fear mongering, people saying elite OCR is dying, it's dead, it's on its way out. I'm going to say that from my perspective, there's no way, no doubt, it's in a rebuild. There's, the restructuring going on. What do you foresee for the elite field for Spartan?
Yeah, so that's interesting, because we can go back even to like 2016 and we were selling out the Elite Wave. But we were selling it out with racers like me. I would be there, I would hole shot it because hey, it's an NBC race. I mean, there's videos of me next to Killian and beating him for the first 20 feet. And as soon as the camera was gone, I was on the ground, huffing puffing, but I got there. So obviously we started gatekeeping that and we saw a huge decline in the numbers, but not the quality, right? Like we didn't lose Ryan Atkins, VJ, those racers. We lost the people, like myself that probably belonged in the age group or other racers that just wanted that first heat or to even know what they were doing. It was, oh, hey, this is a 7:30 start time. I want to get done as soon as possible. So I'm just going to grab that heat. And they didn't realize that they were signing up to run against like a Ryan Atkins and that type of stuff. So we took a big hit with that in the numbers, but internally and myself personally, it wasn't a concern because we had the quality there. Some of the heats at some of our local races were really low. And that was kind of concerning because we were hoping to build the program a little bit more. And we didn't see that through there, but the quality of those heats were there. Obviously, now with some kind of changes in prize money and structure, yeah, we are in a rebuilding system. And kind of part of this major change that we saw, you kind of mentioned some employees being shuffled or changed up, comes a change for me. And I hopefully will be focusing a little bit more on the sports side of things, from all aspects of it, not just the product side of it, but the marketing and that stuff, and trying to bring new people in and recruiting people. So, as a company, we understand it's important. We understand that it probably needs a little bit of reworking. And, just like the ambassador program and a lot of different things we've seen over the years, we're going to rework it and hopefully it comes out better. There's challenges with that, as obviously, I think the easiest way to attract people is money. Which we all know is probably the toughest thing, but we saw in Saudi Arabia, right? You can kind of always throw money at a problem, fix it, but that's not the way that we can do it right now. So some other creative waves, and working with people like VJ that care about the sport. I've talked to VJ a lot, Leon. A lot of these elite athletes, they do care about the sport and they want to be involved in it. So I want to work with them and see how we can involve this to the kind of the next level. And obviously with the Olympics and sort of the inclusion of, OCR, ninja obstacles, however you want to call it, it's obstacles in the Olympics. How can we use those eyes that are going to be on the product to bring new people to the sport?
Yeah, I like that. I so many people get bogged down in this. Well, that's not OCR in the Olympics. That's not this and that. No, it's not. It's really not. No, it's obstacle sports. It's an obstacle sport in the Olympics, right? Ninja, OCR, all that. It's obstacle sports. That's what's in the Olympics. And it's not even that in the Olympics. It's actually just one modality or one portion of the pentathlon. And I've been through a lot of that with stuff. I'm still part of Obstacle Sports Canada, so I've been on that side of it. And again, I'm used to dealing with the confusion on to where it all ends up and where it's going.
But it's a starting point, right? Like if it performs well, if the viewership is there, who says we can't take a mountain bike course and throw obstacles on it and get a more traditional OCR race there? I mean, I think the mountain bike courses are like perfect for an OCR course, right? I mean, they're tracked out well. You can build obstacles on it, but there has to be a first step to it. And the first step is obviously, like you said, getting it as a modality of an event. But either which way, hopefully in 2028, you'll see obstacles on TV being watched by millions and millions of people. So it's the most eyes probably we'll see on it since, something like American Ninja Warrior.
Well, and I've told people, I've said equate it to downhill skiing, to alpine skiing, right? There's a I don't know how many different forms of alpine skiing in the Olympics now. There's like moguls, there's ski jumping, there's slalom, there's downhill, there's so many different things. They didn't all go in at the same time. One started it, it worked, and it branched out. And I think that's the same concept that an obstacle sports thing is going to roll through in the Olympics. My personal opinion.
Yep, that's the hope.
Yeah. I mean, will work, will not, time will tell, but that's there. A little bit off track. Anyway, so you said you guys went to gatekeeping, which I actually was a fan of. I was a fan of the earn your spot in the elite wave and go from there. Now, you guys have switched and gone back to kind of old school, and I believe I understand why. I still not sure we couldn't have made the other way work, but I get it. But I get it because I'm also a big advocate against sandbagging, and I think that was a problem. So what inspired the change?
I mean, to be blunt, that was kind of Chris. He came over from the Tough Mudder side and he brought that in with him. And so, unfortunately, he was, like you said, one of the people that had left to take a different opportunity. And so he hasn't had a chance to see it through. So now we're trying to kind of pick up and run with those changes he made. It's just like anything else. Obviously, he laid out a lot of plans, but there's some things that are probably in his mind that he knew he was going to execute on and didn't get a chance to. So I don't want to say picking up the pieces because it's not like it's a huge disaster, but just trying to finish what he had started. So that was just a change of his. I'm not sure if I love it, dislike it. It's different. The gatekeeping, as you said, it was something that I kind of really pushed for because we would run into NBC events and not have some of these top racers signed up for it yet. So we had to find a way to shoehorn them in. So it was definitely a change to my mindset, but it doesn't mean it was good or bad. It was just a change. And so now we're kind of working on how to implement that. And it does put us more in line with, your traditional marathons and trail and track events and stuff like that. So it does give us a little bit more of that mainstream feel because this is typically how other industries do it.
And I think, I mean, it can work either way, right? It really can. It's just a matter of the way it goes. Early returns, though, you've had a few events, you've had your one national series race. What are the early returns on how it's going? How are the let's say, how are the waves getting shuttled off? Because I mean, that was something that seemed to me could be a bit of a logistical challenge trying to get everybody organized, a bit of herding cats, if you will.
Yeah, a little bit. Unfortunately, the first race we had in SoCal, the first day we had a microphone blow up, a speaker blow up. I'm not sure exactly what happened. So I feel bad for those first racers because they heard me just kind of scream at the top of my lungs, 3, 2, 1, go. They didn't get any sort of start line speech or anything else. But we got it down. I think it's just a mindset. And the way I kind of explain it to people is to me, it's like boarding an airplane. Everyone has a 7 a.m. boarding time, but if I am sitting in the economy, class where I can't bring any carry-ons with me, maybe I actually get on the plane at 7:30. So it's the same way. We start sending out our pace groups at 7 o'clock. In theory, everyone really has a 7 a.m. start time. We're gonna do that rolling start to get through it. But if you're pace group five, you might not actually get out to the course until 7:30. But you should expect to be kind of at the gate at the start line at 7. A race director is given one big speech, one big instruction manual. And as I start explaining that to some of the MCs and the start line people, they're like, that makes perfect sense. And that's how we kind of want to get through. And we saw great returns on the obstacles not getting backed up that much. Because we were kind of doing this rolling start of like 30 people through. So that part worked well. Some concerns from the age group racers that they didn't know exactly who they were running against and who they were next to. Sunday on SoCal, the first person to cross the finish line actually ended up being third in the race because second and third started in wave group two, and so they've made up those 2 minutes there. So a little bit less fanfare than we kind of wanted, because it was like, oh wait, you may not have won. Let's wait. So those are kind of the downfalls of it. But on the plus side, we had some age group racers that end up podium that they probably would just been age group, but now they're on the elite podium. So we kind of saw the pluses and minuses all play out in SoCal. But as we get more into it, it'll get a little bit smoother. And I think as people just get used to the system, it'll get a little bit cleaner and a little bit less confusion.
And as I said, like there's that one giant perk that there is no sandbagging. You cannot do it, right? It's like, if you were upset about the system because you're not going to get your podium, well, you probably didn't deserve that podium anyway. So,
Yep.
it a little bit harsh reality. All right, I wanted to ask you about. So Spartan's got a lot of championships coming, like a lot overseas and such. One of the ones that has kind of piqued my interest and also raised a lot of questions, the short course ones. So you've got a 100 meter and essentially a Spartan sprint in the same look in Croatia, I believe. Correct. Now the qualification process for this is a little odd in my mind because it makes sense for the sprint, right? So do you have know off the top of your head how you qualify for the sprint?
Yeah, so the sprint, I believe, is a top 50 at any of our regional events, I believe, which would be like Seattle and that stuff. So just like our world championship, we're treating that as a standard world championship. And so a top 50 entry gets you kind of rolled up into that one.
But it's the one for the 100 meter that seems a bit odd to me. So, and how right now are we qualifying for that? Because if I read it right, it's like performing a certain way in a Spartan sprint in a national series, or it could be muddling up a bit. Which
Nope,
again,
you
to me, seems
are.
which it seems a little bit odd, right? Because we're talking 5K to 100 meters, very different crowd of athletes.
Very different. Yeah, so you're right. It's your performance based on just the sprints within a national series. So Jacksonville, which obviously we had some racers not come to. The flip side of it is I know that they are holding quite a few spots open for let's call it wild cards or invitees. We know there's racers, especially probably people that were in Saudi Arabia the weekend of Jacksonville, that will more than deserving should be in Croatia, but they didn't have their one shot there. So yeah, it's Croatia is a weird one, right? Because again, it's Croatia is the one that kind of wanted to put this stuff on, so they dictated a little bit of this. And as you said, we don't have a short course kind of lead up into it. So we had to get a little bit creative with those qualifications. Obviously, if this takes off and it's a great event, it's something we could potentially look at for 2025 and to having more qualifiers. The biggest problem with it is the throughput thing, right? You can only kind of get a certain amount of people through it. And it's a build. It has to be a separate course. It's not like the 3K where we could kind of add it on. It does have to be a separate course. Which would mean us pulling in more trailers, from somewhere else, which is either additional cost or it's just not feasible because, we run multiple events at certain times. So, there's just no way that we could take a trailer from Vermont to Seattle and throw an extra course on there without it being, a substantial cost, for an event that you can only get a handful of people through. Obviously, you're not putting 10,000 people through a 100 meter course. So, yeah, it's a unique situation there for sure.
Would it be possible they'll open it up to like applications like they did for the 3K last year?
Potentially, obviously I think we have some people in mind that we know are going to get invited to it just because of their performance in prior events, in the 3K or other short courses. People that performed well, I would assume in like OCRWC last year or in prior years on the 100 meter course, I think they would have some priority invites. But if it gets down to it and we have spots open, I could see, yeah, some sort of application process.
Yeah, like I think of people where you mentioned there, like Tiana Weberly, who did well at OCRWC and also went over for FISO 100 meter and just obviously American Ninja Warrior, well known. So she's someone who I would not see on a 5K Spartan course, but belongs in a 100 meter championship.
Exactly.
Someone along that line. So that's cool. So you said it has to be a standalone course. Will it be a Spartan 100 meter or will it be more of the traditional and now set standard FISO 100 meter?
Great question.
What I do,
That
man.
was that was one of the things we were working on with Chris. It might be a little bit of a combination of each. Obviously we had a little taste of this at OCRWC. I think it worked well, minus I didn't love Olympus in it. I think Olympus is kind of the opposite of what you want in a 100 meter course because it slows everything down. So I know that we are still kind of putting the final touches on that course, but I think it'll be more closely resembling the FISO, kind of course, and that you won't see stuff like Olympus or obviously like a sandbag carry or anything like that. And it's going to be your, quick, fast pace course that you know that people want for that 100 meters.
See, I'll be honest, I didn't mind Olympus in there because the reason being is it took away from the jump and skip, and it put a little bit of a hitch in everybody's giddy up, right? You couldn't just, you had to think about it, you had to employ a different skill set than you did for a lot of the other ones. For example, on the FISO course, many of the overhead obstacles, it is essentially the same movement. It's two touch bell, two touch bell. Whereas Olympus, you cannot do that crap on. So I didn't mind the use of that. I wouldn't mind seeing an Olympus or sorry, a Zed wall in there at the end, especially the new inclination and the new adaptation of it with the ropes on the end. I don't
The
mind seeing
zigzag wall. The zigzag wall.
zigzag. Is it a zigzag wall now? Yeah. So I don't mind seeing that just to throw a little bit of a wrench in it, because if Faisal is going to do that 100 meter the way they're going to do it all the time, if you guys are having 100 meter, I would throw it different and say this is a completely different animal. That's just my take on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because obviously, if we do the FISO, then you can have world records and that type of stuff. But being a Spartan too, as you said, something like the Z wall. Or something along those lines is more within our kind of forte.
Yeah, I
Makes a little
wouldn't have
bit more
minded even
Spartan.
old school throwing a 400-pound tire flip right in the middle. One, two, off you go. Just monkeyed up a little bit, get a little crazy. Because I think for me, even more so now, where you're getting a lot of standardization, and I like standardization, I like records, I like doing that. But now it makes the stuff that switches it up even more special. I love having both options, right? I like having where you can get your surprise, and I like having where I can train for exactly. So we'll see if we can go. Yeah, so that was the big thing I was concerned about. I are interested in. I mean, the 100 meter, I love those short for courses. It's no secret. I love hard obstacles. I think it's great. And I think that event will do really well because the Europeans, they love that stuff.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing, as Americans, I think sometimes we get a little bit greedy or complacent, right? Like for years we had everything here, right? The world championship was here, the everything was here, Ultra World Championship, North American Championship, everything. So as we grow as a country or as a company, more countries are interested in bringing stuff here. Obviously, we have a kids event in China, and there was some kind of grumblings of that, but China puts on kids events, standard kids events with over 10,000 racers. So it's like they've put in the work as a partner to build just amazing kids events. They actually have a world record, which I think goes to show that you have world records for anything, but it was the largest kids OCR event ever, something like that. So they set that world record in 2023. So it was a pretty easy decision, I would say, to allow them to host the World Championship because they have done such a great job with the kids events over there. And it's hard to compete. Yes, we'll get 1,500 kids sometimes here in America, but they're putting on events with over 10,000. And it's we are a global company, and for it to be a World Championship, we can't have it here every single year, every single event. So it's good to see it expanding out there, and I think it does speak to the health of the company. To kind of go back to your original question, right? We're putting on world events in Abu Dhabi, China, all these other countries out there, and big events in Saudi Arabia with like the Tough Mudder a couple weekends ago.
Well, and like I've had people say to me, like, well, they're just going these places for the money. I'm like, yeah, they are.
That doesn't hurt, not at
Money
all.
business, of course they are. Yeah, like they gotta. And this is the thing, and I've said it before. I want you guys to go where the money is, because when Spartan makes money, that means prize money for elites. That means people get paid out. That means the sport grows. That means obstacle innovation. That means new jobs. If they're not making money, shit shuts down. They go where the money is, shit grows.
Well, I
It's
mean, look at just the history of it, and I mean, just Rugged Maniac, right? That
yeah.
was a week ago or 2 weeks ago. They're backed by, I can't remember their revenue, but it's like $4 billion a year. Their parent company made it, but they decided that the return on investment wasn't enough. They weren't charging a lot for their races, and I think that's just the reality is this is an expensive business. And even going back to Iron Man, yes, they put on kind of long courses, but they're not building obstacles, they're not transporting stuff. And Iron Man early bird pricing was $800, and it's like, I get it, you need a lot of police officers and that type of stuff, and probably permits, but their costs, I can't see it being anywhere near what our costs are. We travel to each event with, I believe it's five trailers and, hundreds and hundreds of hotel room nights and food and staff and, just gas money getting those trailers from one location to the next and, staff overnight to be security for those and car rentals and everything else. And it's like, yeah, Iron Man doesn't have that stuff, and they're charging way, way more. So, when you see a company charging $60 for a race, it doesn't surprise me that someone like the numbers and was like, we could get a bigger return on our investment by doing a 10K or something like that, where again you get a couple police officers and a few cones to mark a course, and you're happy with that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been on that side of it. I've helped out, and it's a lot of money. And I know because I charged him a lot for me to be there. So no, it's a lot. It's ridiculously expensive, and the whole traveling OCR thing is it's a logistical nightmare. It really is. And like you say, compared to a road 5K or something like that, or a color run or whatever, like just it's yeah,
Yeah,
it's.
I mean, we have people, that's their job, right? They are figuring out where the trailers are and when they're coming and, when can they get there? When do they have to leave? They're getting the staff to drive them. And I think with Tough Mudder and DECA, I believe we're at seven trailer sets, I want to say. So, and that's a consideration too with events. It's like, we maybe didn't love having Jacksonville the same weekend as Saudi Arabia, but that is potentially when the trailer was available because they need to get there 10 days before the event. They usually stay, 3 days after the event. And then you have to get them to the next event. They obviously don't just magically appear in Atlanta. You need to drive them to Atlanta, which takes a few days in some cases, depending on where they're going. So yeah, we have a person or two that's just dedicated to that, to trailer shipping lanes. And that is one of the considerations, unfortunately, with events. It's like we would love to, put events on certain weekends, but it's just not possible with that type of stuff. And with the fact there's only 52 weeks in the year, so there's going to be overlap at some points.
All right, man. So let's wrap this up. And just to finish, what's your outlook for this year and in coming years, upcoming years, for the competitive side? You say there's that you're probably going to have a bit of a bigger role in that. What's your vision? What are we hoping to get happening?
Yeah, I mean, I first and foremost, I want to talk to the athletes and figure out what we could do for them. There's little things that maybe we can start tweaking, start changing. But growing the sport so that, I mean, if you look back at it, like Michael Jordan is always, I think, a great example. He made so much more money away from basketball than he did with basketball. And it was because of spotlight that the NBA put on him, right? I mean, obviously he was a very, very skilled player. But if the NBA wasn't on TV, or wasn't putting a spotlight on him, he would have never gotten the type of, endorsements and deals that he did. And that's with all the sports. So, prize money is something we can do and can work on. But more importantly, if we can make these guys stars and put spotlights on them, it grows their opportunities to, make more income outside of, the sport itself. So I think that's the most important thing. How do we just kind of grow the spotlight on these racers and, give them the recognition they need? We don't always do a great job of marketing who our winners were sometimes, right? And just kind of give them the true recognition that they deserve. So working on that. And yeah, I mean, I hate to kind of keep repeating myself, but really just brightening the spotlight on our athletes. to give them more opportunities outside of there. And obviously, more opportunities they get, the more they can grow, and the more they grow, the more we can grow and bring more people into the sport. You start seeing people that get successful, you bring more people into that sport. So that's kind of my big drive right now is how do we do that? Whether that's something like the 3K or 100 meter or another format that is a little bit more TV viewer friendly, or just finding ways to make the sprint super and beast more exciting to a kind of viewing crowd. So, I think they're great races. People love them when you're out there, but they don't always perform well when you're viewing. And we kind of see that with like the live coverage that we've had and stuff like that.
Awesome, man. Anything else you want to get and want to talk about before we check out?
No, I don't think so. I mean, like I said, sky isn't falling. We're healthy here. We're rebounding back. Obviously sad that we had to kind of transition some people out, to put the most PC of ways, but it's not it wasn't because of some kind of catastrophic issue here. It was just taking a step back and reevaluating, and hopefully we just continue to grow and go forward. And as you said, just keep supporting all OCR. It's not just Spartan Race. I'll definitely say there's other OCRs out there, obviously, and supporting them all, because I think something like Rugged Maniac was a big wake-up call for a lot of people. So continue supporting OCR, and as we work towards seeing obstacles in 2028 in the Olympics, I think that's just going to be a huge boom for us as a sport. And competitive racers, give me some time and working on what we can do to make this more beneficial for all of us.
All right. Thanks so much, Gary. And we'll see you out on the course, man.
See you soon.